Yo, what is up, guys? Welcome back to Tag Team, the Pokemon Trading Card Games premier podcasting duo. My name is Riley Holbert, joined as always by my good friend, Mr. JW Grewal. JW, how's it hanging?
Hanging okay, Riley. Just the stresses of life and hobbies. It's kind of funny when you have a hobby that stresses you out this much.
That's real talk for sure. The tournament grind gets to you, I feel like.
I play when I'm in the tournament, like when I'm playing my rounds, it's what I love because it's I just think about that. Like I can clean my mind, I get in a flow state during the rounds. But the whole week, 2, 3 weeks leading up to it, I'm
Yeah.
like just like stressing and I shouldn't be, this should be
Yeah, like
fun, I
pre-tournament
think.
anxiety
Yeah,
type of thing.
exactly.
It's the downfall of having that competitive nature, right? Like you want to min-max your performance, and that leads to this almost like toxic relationship with the pre-tournament prep.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's we obviously have one day to go before the big day, so just gotta make it through one more work day. In
It's a good way
many
to look at
ways,
it. It's a
in
good way
many
to look at
ways.
it. Yeah, I work off tomorrow. We're recording this on Wednesday before NAIC. I work off tomorrow so I can fly over to Columbus. Hopefully I'm not affected by any of these weird like travel situations that other people are. Though I'm not entirely sure if those are like Columbus specific problems that people are having. And I'm excited to be out there in general. Obviously, I went to Ohio State, so like being, I have friends that are still in the area, so it's kind of an exciting time for me to be able to go and visit my stomping grounds, if you will, and see some old friends and play some poke. I know you're excited as well to have poke right in your backyard. That's always fun.
It's great. I'm trying to think about how I should get to the venue
Yeah.
for Friday morning because I could like take a little scooter
Oh yeah.
or maybe I could walk.
It'd be a long
It'd
walk, right?
be like, I don't know, 45 minutes probably, but
Yeah, that's
30,
tough.
45 minutes, but I don't know. It might be a nice little thing to do in the morning,
With the air
get the
quality,
mind
though?
ready. Well, that's a fair point.
Yeah, I think it's a little better in Columbus than it is in Madison right now. It is nasty in Madison.
Yeah.
Like visibly very hazy. It's like kind of, you can feel it when you breathe outside in Madison.
Oh,
It's not good out here.
yeah, no, it's not quite that bad here, but you certainly can see it, like if you're looking pretty far in the distance and everything just is a little darker today,
No, it's like super bad out here. Like it's like everything has like an Instagram filter over it, or it's like all a little hazed over. It's pretty bad. Yeah. The like northern Midwest, like the Chicago, southern Wisconsin area is been hit pretty bad.
Getting torched.
Yeah. So is what it is. But yeah, like today is my last day at work for the week, and I'm head over to Columbus tomorrow, so I'm excited for that. And obviously you're excited for NAIC, and I mean collectively we want to just freaking get right in there, right? Like figure out what's going on.
Yeah, I think so. It's kind of it just feels like there was nothing crazy. I feel like that's going to come out of certainly our group. We're kind of locked on a meta deck, locked on a very like consistent, well-performing deck. But there's nothing like new and crazy. I think I'm most excited to see just what other players bring that will shake things up for Worlds.
Yeah, I mean, Paldea Evolved is interesting because it had some really like powerful cards, but it feels like they almost augmented the existing decks as opposed to like really reshaping the metagame, right?
Yeah.
Like the metagame is shifted for sure, but it feels like the staples of last metagame are all still kind of staples here today. And all of those decks that were popular last format have been enhanced by Paldea Evolved, as opposed to like something new coming out of the woodwork.
Yeah, and not even I would even go so far as to say, like, you say enhanced, but for some of these archetypes, they don't really even utilize any of the new cards. Like, you have Guardiou, which maybe...
I don't know, like, Super Rod's an Iono? Like, come on, Guardiou is majorly enhanced.
Guardiou's majorly enhanced, but I guess, like, Lasso and Box.
But even then, like, I think Super Rod's a pretty big deal over Clara. Like, 100% Clara reliance versus Super Rod is a big deal, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So... You know, but we have these, like, little pieces, right? You know, we have... It feels like the best cards to come out of a Pale Day Evolved are Iono and Super Rod.
Right, right, sure.
And, like, those are cards that fit into decks, that not that decks are built around. So, you know, you'll kind of see that coloring. So I guess let's go over the kind of outline for today's episode. I think that'll help color, like, kind of what we're hitting on here. So for today, we're going to hit on the top five decks going into NAIC. I think we have a pretty good, like, ordered list at this point of what we're expecting to see and kind of their representation at NAIC. Mm-hmm. And then after the card of the day and the ad read, we'll do a little bit of a different segment. I don't think we've ever done anything quite like this, but the decks that we think you don't need to respect heading into NAIC. Like, what are the things that you can get away without teching for? Or taking a bad matchup to in general as you head into the North American International Championship. So with that tone set, JW, I think it's only fair that we just go straight in for the throat on the top five decks that we're expecting to see at NAIC. So do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, absolutely. Starting at number, do we want to go top down or bottom up?
Let's go bottom up.
Okay, yeah, number five. This is a deck that actually I think gets a little bit more space to work with in this format, which is quite strong. You know, obviously having just a few open slots to devote to maybe more consistency is really good. Makes pretty solid use of the new Squawk ability. That is, of course, Lugia V-Star. I think what makes Lugia so strong is what made it strong last format. I mean, it just has some of these most explosive turn twos of any deck in the format. And again, like I said, you gain the Squawk ability, so you could see, you know, upwards of 15 cards there on your first turn of the game. So it's a really, really strong archetype. You're losing, you know, you don't necessarily need the single strike package. And if you do opt to play the single strike package, which I think is still best, in my opinion. But if you do have to play the single strike package, you don't even need the Urshifu VMAX. So that's where you get your space to work around. You could play a few more Pokemon. You know, you could throw in a Snorlax or something like that. But number five, Lugia V-Star.
Yeah, and you kind of preempted one of the questions that I was going to ask, which is, what sort of variant of Lugia do you prefer? And it's worth noting that, like, the Snorlax has significantly improved in Lugia. You have the ability to remove special conditions now with the new special energy, so you're not, like, forced to move the Snorlax, which is big. And even if you are forced to move it, you have jet energy now, which is a way to, like, pivot out of the active, which Lugia didn't have access to before. So certainly the colorless Lugia is a winner from Paldea Evolved, but it seems like you're firmly in the camp that the single strike package is kind of the way to go. Is there a reason that you are leaning towards that over the colorless variant?
Well, as strong of an attacker as the Snorlax is, I don't know that it can form the backbone of the deck. I don't think it can be the main attacker, or at least kind of the main attacker outside of Lugia V-Star. And the reason for that is I just don't love the damage to cost ratio, like how much energy that you're investing for how much return you're getting. In most matchups, that Snorlax is going to be knocked out, so you're forced to find another one to put on the bench. And while it is pretty good in the Lost and Box matchup, it really, in my opinion, falls short in a lot of these other matchups. Having to swing for a two-shot, but not being able to withstand a two-shot, in a lot of cases means that you're trading evenly or potentially even unfavorably, depending on what your opponent can muster.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that a lot myself as well. Like, some of those bigger attackers, like things that exceed 220 HP, Lugia can struggle to knock out if it's not playing the single strike package, which is a lot of the Pokemon in the format, right? Yeah. Like and you don't really want to be trading those two for ones, right? Because like where your opponent is able to, where you have to swing twice rather to take one knockout, because your opponent can like retreat and play Collapse Stadium or heal somehow, and it just like makes your game plan more difficult than it needs to be.
Yeah, exactly. And then if you think about the cost per attack, you're saying that you're going to invest 3 energy per attack and you're attacking twice, you know, again, you look at how much it how much it costs to actually just pull off these attacks and consecutive attacks, assuming that the Snorlaxes keep going down. It just is a recipe for having subpar turns.
Yeah. No, I think I'm with you there. I do think certainly the Snorlax is an appealing attacker, but it's probably not the basis of a deck. It's not the backbone of a deck, to borrow your language. So, you know, I think sort of the consistency cost is maybe worth it to play the single strike package, just because you do have that power ceiling. Personally, Lugia is not a deck that I'm really considering for NAIC. I think the deck is just a little too unreliable, and it just feels like out of your control. And I think there are other decks that just have that same ceiling with more agency over your games.
Yeah, I actually don't think it's a bad choice. Like, if you're sitting here,
I don't think it's a bad choice.
None of our top five, I really don't think are bad choices, except for one. But for the most part, like, Lugia is something that I would consider playing. Like, if it has a strong showing here, like, I would absolutely put it on the table for Worlds. But
for
it's
sure.
just one of those decks that we were testing it, and or at least I was, and I know Andrew, you know, you were as well. Just like, you get into games and you know, ultimately it just had kind of a poor showing at the start, and there were decks that were maybe a little more promising, so then our testing kind of got rerouted.
Well, what I'll say as well is, like, when Andrew and I were testing, and maybe you have different experiences, but when Andrew and I were testing, it felt like Lugia, when firing all cylinders, did have a good Lost Box matchup, but when Lugia firing all cylinders did not necessarily have a good Gardevoir matchup if Gardevoir was firing equally hard. So at that point, like, I would almost rather play Gardevoir, I guess. Like, if I'm gonna choose to fire on all cylinders, I'm gonna choose Gardevoir over Lugia.
Sure.
If that makes sense.
Sure.
So that's kind of where I've landed on that. I also want to note, before we head into our next deck, that we actually, when we were building our top five, we neglected a pretty irrelevant deck. I don't know if you noticed this, but I do want to give a shout out to Mew VMAX as well, particularly the Fusion Strike variant. I think that's going to be a pretty popular deck heading into NAIC. It does have additional hate in this format with the Spiritomb. You know, the Spiritomb not only turning off your opponent's Pokemon V, but also completely locking you out of the game if you're able to use its attack, preventing you from playing any cards or taking any actions until you time out.
Yeah,
so
true.
It's very powerful. It's a huge risk factor for Mew. But, like, actually, you know, people are going to play this for Team Engardi, I think, or at least will consider it. And that's addition to the Drapions that have kind of plagued the format already. So Mew feels like a risky choice, but I do want to give it sort of an honorable mention before we go too much farther, because I noticed that we didn't have it in our top five here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, with Mew, it's you know, one of the ultimate, like, run hot decks, just in general. And then the big X factor right now is going to be whether or not Gardevoir players play Spiritomb, as I feel like that's the deck that can best utilize it. It's most easily able to search it out. Lost Box has issues with its bench space, so it's probably not going to be utilized in there. Maybe Arceus decks also opt to tech in, you know, a Spiritomb and a Drapion, right, if they have a couple slots for those kinds of techs. So, you know, Mew will have a bit of a target on its back, but one of those decks that, you know, I'm not going to be shocked if it top fours or wins the tournament. Like, it's just
one
for of those
sure.
decks.
And I'll say as well, if Gardevoir is not playing Spiritomb, that Mew actually feels like one of... My cat really has a lot to say right now. I don't know. I don't know why. He's, like, beefing with me right now. Buddy, you good,
Lock
buddy?
Lock him up.
Yeah, him you up. Think so? I guess he really just wants attention, is what it feels like. But what I was going to say is that Gardevoir without Spiritomb, it feels like that's kind of what Mew is gunning to face in this format. I don't know if you feel the same, but Like, Mew is that deck that can kind of reach for those Gardevoir EX KOs. It can disrupt every turn. It has Path to the Peak. And it feels like not many other decks can really assault on Gardy as hard as Mew can. And it's also just hard to reach for those knockouts in the first couple turns against Mew. You know, Gardy realistically can get some pretty crazy turn two reaches, but it's not getting the turn two reach against Mew yet, or Mew VMAX, let's be real.
Right. Yeah.
So, if you believe that Gardevoirs are not really going to be playing the Spiritomb, which is a big if, right? That's a huge question mark. Then Mew actually could be a good choice. But I think Mew's downfall is that Spiritomb exists, that Gardevoir can play it. That's an addition to Drapion. That's an addition to the Lost Zone matchups, which are already kind of tough. So, like, you know, you're kind of playing matchup roulette when you play Mew.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Worth mentioning, though. Let's go on to number four. Riley, why don't you introduce our number four deck?
Yeah, so number four is a deck that neither JW nor I respect, but it is a deck that is a fan favorite, and it's a fan favorite play style as well, and that's Baxcalibur, you know, the rain dance type of deck. Though Baxcalibur got a significantly less cool name. It's what, like Severe Cold or something? Not nearly as cool as Rain Dance is, you know, take away there. Sure. You know, Baxcalibur, Chen Pao just doesn't necessarily have the stopping power, in our opinion, to go all the way. It feels very similar to Maraidon in a lot of ways. Certainly there's key differences, but I think fundamentally, like, turn by turn, you're achieving similar things.
Yeah, you're a big two prizer that's looking to take one shots.
Yeah.
Very similar to
Maraidon. You know, what Baxcalibur is going for it is that Chen Pao is sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy, and that it's able to search out those water energies to fulfill its own attack and then accelerate them. And then obviously the synergy with Irida is pretty insane. But the downside of that is that it's pretty vulnerable to, like, disruption. If you're not able to get the Baxcalibur out for whatever reason quickly enough, then you kind of just lose on the spot. And, you know, it's kind of offset as well by if your opponent's able to get, like, quick mana fees down and you're not able to deal with it, then you're probably not getting the prize trades that you're looking for, which is a huge blow against the deck, in my opinion. So I think Baxcalibur will be out there. Again, it's a fan favorite strategy. People love Rain Dance style decks, and this is probably the best one we've had in a little while, but I just don't think it's there for Baxcalibur to succeed.
Yeah, it feels like a worse Lugia in many ways, but just a different flavor. It feels like a worse Maraidon, just a different flavor. And I don't expect any major testing group to bring Baxcalibur. Like, it's the one deck that I think of the top five that I'm just the most, you know, dismissive of overall. I really just don't see this deck performing well at all. I'm ready to eat my words. Like, I'm very happy to eat my words, but
I'd be sick, right? It'd be sick to eat your words.
Yeah, no, seriously. Like, I mean, I was right on Maraidon, you know.
No, you weren't. No, you weren't.
I was, bro.
No, you weren't.
I was the biggest.
I'm going to put this out there. JW does not have to eat his words if one random Baxcalibur makes top eight, if every other Baxcalibur in day two is in, like, the bottom 10. Okay? That doesn't count.
Yeah, that's kind of how it was with Maraidon. But anyway, it, you know, I'm ready to eat my words there when I say that this deck is not particularly strong. I just don't think it has the staying power. You're looking at a stage two without built-in draw support, so you just got to be hitting those Iridas on turns that you might want to be bossing or Ionoing, but you need to go for the rare candy Baxcalibur. Like, there are just so many moving pieces and not enough strength, and the fact that you're just discarding energy off your main attacker, like, there are a lot of things wrong with Baxcalibur. I could not see it, you know, even sniffing a top eight.
You know, I think one could sneak in there, but it would be like the one and the rest suffer for it, you know.
Sure,
like,
sure.
Kind of like the Maraidons, where they all gather the spirit bomb onto one Maraidon who makes top eight. But yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, when I was solitaring with Baxcalibur, it didn't feel good enough, even when I was misplaying it and thought you could use Chen Pao from the bench. And even then, it still didn't feel good enough. So I don't know why I would play it when the chimp out isn't even that good. You know? Yep. Can't even use it from the bench. Come on, man. That's so crazy. Yeah, I just don't think it's all there for Max Caliber. I do think Rain Dance decks are sort of a popular archetype. People like using that unlimited energy Excel, but I have to say it's maybe better to keep this one in the binder for now. All right, JW, number three, what do you got?
Number three is Arceus, and specifically Arceus Giratina. So Arceus decks, I think there's a couple main ones that you would not be surprised to see. Of course, Arceus Giratina, and then Arceus Duraludon. There's not a ton of reason, in my opinion, to play Arceus Duraludon, but Arceus Giratina benefits from a lot of the same just strategy that it had last format, where you're trying to get your opponent down to a low hand size and then throw up big V-star attackers that they can't deal with.
With Path and Play.
With Path and Play, of course, yes. So it gains a big, you know, big help here with Iono. Obviously, you're still playing a heavy count of Judge, but that combination, now you have like 7 to 8 supporters that can disrupt your opponent's hand, throw down a path. You never know what can happen. So this is one of those decks that I would expect to perform decently well, but it's just not a deck with a lot of options.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a straightforward deck, right? And I think we kind of see that reflected in Arctina's results, where it tends to congregate at like the upper middle of tournaments, where its sort of consistency and mid-level stopping power is able to propel it up to that point. But then at a certain point, like, players are just going to be high rolling or drawing out of those locks or whatever. And Arceus Giratina doesn't really have the stopping power to deal with those situations, it feels like. You know, I think I agree with you that the Arc Duraludon archetype doesn't feel nearly as good right now. I think the main reason for that is Iono. The Arceus Duraludon decks really enjoyed building up larger hand sizes or accumulating in their hand. You know, worst case, they were getting disrupted with like a Judge most of the time, and that's still like an acceptable hand size, but like going down to 2/1 card off of Iono does not feel good at all with those Arceus Duraludon decks that don't have any draw support Pokemon. So that archetype feels a little bit washed. I'll say personally, like, I tried a lot of Arceus stuff, and I mentioned this the other week on the podcast as well. Andrew and I really tried to make Arceus work, and it just didn't feel like Arceus really had what it took to beat Gardevoir if Gardevoir could draw out of path. So I think if you're playing Arceus, you should either feel really confident that you're going to lock Gardevoir out of the game, or you should assume that you're not playing Gardevoir that much, and it doesn't matter, which is a big or. Or you have some sort of alternative game plan against Gardevoir that doesn't rely on using like these multi-prize attackers, which is typically not super compatible with Arceus due to the fact that Trinity Nova can only power up Pokemon V. So Arceus is not my favorite deck going into NAIC. I do think it'll get a smattering of middle-of-the-road placements, but I would be surprised to see it win the tournament.
Full agreement. Let's move on to number two. Deck number two is one of the two decks that we are considering as a testing group heading into NAIC, and that is, of course, Lost Box. And when I say Lost Box in this format, I'm, of course, referring to the Turbo list featuring maybe some Trekking Shoes, but certainly no Kyogre, a more kind of explosive, I guess,
yeah,
more for turn one, turn two attack, as opposed to trying to set up for an eventual Kyogre late game. It's just not very reasonable to expect Kyogre. Kyogre is still a solid card. I mean, it can still do work in this format, but just unfortunately with Iono being so prevalent and the high amount of Gardy that you should expect to see in day one and day two of the internats, I just don't see Kyogre being the play. So we say Lost Box, Turbo Lost Box. There are some other variants. You might see a Charizard Lost Box or something like that. But overall, really, really impressed with Lost Box matchups in the format right now. Really good into Gardevoir, one of the few decks that can say that. Pretty good into Mew VMAX. Decent into a lot of just the random stuff. You know, you have your decent into like Chin Pao, decent into just kind of rogue archetypes. Still struggles a little bit with Arceus decks from my experience, but overall, I think the, and Lugia for that matter, but overall, I'm really impressed with the deck's matchups, because the matchups that it is favored in, it's like solidly favored in.
Yeah.
Like you're looking at a 60% win rate against things like Gardevoir from, again, our experience.
Yeah, and I think you brought up a good point. It does have tougher matchups, but those are matchups you're maybe more willing to accept than average. I also think the Lugia matchup is somewhat dependent on Lugia firing on all cylinders, which I feel like of the decks that we've mentioned, Lugia might honestly be the least consistent of the ones we've talked about so far in terms of like reliably getting its optimal turn two setup.
But bro, you got Squawk. You got the Squawk.
Dude. The Squawk helps. The Squawk helps for sure. I don't think it fixes fundamentally the problem.
The Lugia savior.
You know, Quickfall is really an Evo Incense for really, really good cards. And Lugia really wishes they were in the format, I think.
True.
So, yeah, I agree with everything you said. Lost Box feels like it has one of the better matchups against Guardian in the format, which is, spoiler alert, a huge player going into this format. And it generally just is a little bit of a gatekeeper, right? Like, yeah, it takes tougher matchups to things like Arceus, but in exchange, it gatekeeps a lot of rogue strategies. Things that rely on evolutions, for example, really hate going as Lost Box because that Sableye seriously threatens any evolution-based strategy, which includes Gardevoir as well as other decks out there. So, you know, Lost Box is a top contender for me. You know, if I had to say personally at this cross section of time, I would say like 90% confidence I am playing a comfy based deck. I just think it's kind of that deck, and I expect actually that it might be the most popular deck at NAIC to play comfy. You know, maybe if you split it out by variants, that Guardy might be more popular, but I think Lost Box is going to be in droves in this format.
Yeah, I completely agree there. And you know, while we're on the topic like of the mirror match, is there anything that you can do in the mirror that you should like build your deck in a certain way, anything that you can tech for the mirror, or should you just say, you know, I hope I go first and I hope I can outplay you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the main potential mirror tech is like maybe the Hawlucha. It can be a big swing if you're able to get a good Hawlucha turn. I often find it's like hard to get the Hawlucha exactly at the time when you want it, you know, no matter what you're playing in your deck. I think ultimately, most of the time, the Lost Box mirror will come down to whoever starts Sableyeing first. Whether that's the player goes first or second, whoever starts using Sableye first is likely going to win. So to me, there's like kind of two ways you can do that. You can go first and like really try and turbo out a turn two Sableye, or you can go second and you're probably just getting a turn two Sableye regardless. You know, we saw in Caleb versus Azul in, I think it was Fresno, but maybe it was Milwaukee, that they were opting to go second in the mirror because A, that's like easier to get turn two Sableye, and B, you can attack with Cramorant turn one to take that turn one knockout followed by a Sableye. I think that's likely like what most players should be doing in the Lost Box mirrors, is trying to get that turn one Cramorant, turn two Sableye, and Sableye from there sort of cadence. And I think ultimately if you're able to get that reliable Sableye turn two, that'll be more impactful than like any matchup specific tech that you put in. And what I find in my experience is that the way to get Sableye turn two is similar like kinds of techs that you would play to like turbo out your deck faster, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like playing four seal stones and playing lost vacuums and stuff is how you reliably get Sableye turn two. Mm-hmm. And like those are things that can already help augment sort of the turbo strategy of the deck.
So what, because this deck, I mean, we played a quote-unquote turbo Lost Box deck, you know, similar, a few cards off to what we're considering for NAIC. And we were burned in Milwaukee. You know, you went to
burned.
I hesitate to say, yeah, it's not really. I say it in air quotes because you went 2-2 drop. You didn't actually play the full tournament, and then I went 6-3. So like, you know, it's not certainly
it's like
certainly
middle of the road, to be, right? Like,
embarrassed about. You know, it wasn't a complete disaster of a tournament, but it's not up to our expectations. Obviously, it's not where we want to be. So why are you, Riley, considering going back to the well? Pulling out the comb fees and the Sableyes and giving this one another shot.
Well, I think primarily Gardevoir's rise to power is what informs Lostbox's success. You know, one of the things that I struggled with at Milwaukee was, like, I was playing Arceus, I was playing Mirrors, and I think Arceus will probably be less popular than it was in the Scarlet and Violet format. And the mirrors will probably be equally, if not more popular, but in exchange, you got like these guardy matchups that are more popular. And I think, I feel like I'm confident in my ability to at least route the mirror. You know, that doesn't mean I'll necessarily win every time, but I feel like I can find my routes better and more reliably than the average player. And I feel like I can beat the guardy players more reliably than they can beat me. So I think in this format, you're looking at Guardian and Lost Box is your big two. And so you want to either take a skill-based matchup against those decks and with the confidence to outplay them, or you want to take a favorable matchup to those decks. And realistically, you're probably taking like one of each, right? Yeah. And one of the ways you can achieve that is just by playing Lost Box itself.
Absolutely.
So I think that ties nicely into like talking about Gardevoir, right? Which is the obvious other deck in this top five. I think you could argue that either Guardy or Lost Box should take that top one slot, but Guardy is a beast in this format. The addition of Iono and Super Odd, I know we've said it before, but it really can't be underestimated how big of a difference that it makes for Gardevoir in this format. Just so powerful. The Iono every turn is brutal. It's hard to deal with in addition to the uncapped damage that Guardy is achieving every turn. There's just so many things that deck can do. It draws a ton with Kirlia. You know, it's scary. It's scary. And when Andrew and I were testing the other week, Gardevoir was running the table like crazy. It was insane the power level this deck can achieve when it's firing on all cylinders. With maybe the downside being that it is still a stage two deck at the end of the day. You're dealing with playing rare candies. You're dealing with evolving over the course of multiple turns. But, I mean, Gardevoir is still a deck that I would kind of be fine defaulting to. Like, honestly, Gardevoir is still kind of sticking in my mind. Maybe that's because I was the one playing Gardevoir when Andrew and I were testing. but Gardevoir is sticking out to me, like, big time. And I'm considering it for sure. So, JW, I'm curious, like, what your thoughts are on Guardy and where you would sort of place it in the spectrum here.
Yeah, Guardy is a clear number one, in my opinion. It just takes average matchups across the board, I would say, save for the Lost Box matchup, which I feel is considerably in Lost Box's favor. But other than that, you know, you have routes against Lost Zone Box. You can even maybe play techs for it. So Clap Stadium is a really good idea. Maybe even a Penny. You know, there are certain things that you can do to try to play your way out of that matchup and into, you know, just a little bit more, having a little bit more favorability into Lost Zone. But overall, you just have too many options, I think, for the Gardevoir deck. You can one-shot things. You have, obviously, Iono, which is one of the stronger cards in the format. It's just a strong, strong deck that when you get set up, you get, you know, two or three Kirlia out, you get that that big EX going, you get a supporter, like it just feels like your whole deck's at your fingertips.
For real.
I love that.
Yeah, and obviously like as a big Zoroark guy, you know, the ability to trade again feels great. I love that feeling. And Gardevoir just feels so good to play, honestly. It's such a powerhouse of a deck. You're doing so much every turn, but in a way that's really satisfying. You know, when I think of the only other deck that I think takes as many actions a turn as Gardevoir, there's two, and the one would be Lost Box, and the other would be Mew. And I would just say the main differentiator for Gardevoir is doesn't have to loss zone stuff, so it doesn't feel as bad turn by turn.
Right.
You know, and the decisions don't feel as heart-wrenching. And compared to Mew, it's just a little bit more satisfying, in my opinion, to, like, trade and build these massive hands versus burning your hand down and refilling it. Mm. So it's just, like, really satisfying. It's fun to play. Accelerating from the discard is so fun. You know, it's consistently a strategy that people love in the TCG. And so combining Rain Dance with accelerating from the discard, obvious winner, right? It's an awesome deck. It's really fun. And it's really powerful too. It just has the right, exact right, like Goldilocks combination of stuff available to it. It's like, it almost feels like the designers intended for it to be this way, where Gardevoir would have this kind of uncapped potential at the start of the block, and then it would taper off after rotation.
Sure. Sure, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, are there any things in Guardi that you are trying to prepare yourself for? Anything that you've seen from lists in either online tournaments or just things that you've been thinking about that you know, players should maybe expect to see or shouldn't, you know, throw people for a loop if they do
see? Yeah, I mean, some of my observations, stadium counts seem really high right now. You know, it doesn't seem like Path is that reliable against Gardevoir at the moment. Between Worker and 3 to 4 stadiums, even in some of these decks, it's tough to say that you'll be sticking Path turn by turn versus Guardi. Obviously, they're playing high Iono counts, and that's tough to deal with turn after turn. And I think one thing that I don't think you'll expect to see is you probably won't expect to see like a lot of that Penny or Switch type of cards in Guardi. At least in these online tournaments, people aren't really playing that much, which does open this small opening in the door for things like the Mawile to come and have shenanigans. That stuff always makes you a little anxious, to be honest, because if your opponent just happens to play it, then you're kind of screwed, you know, if that was the strategy you were leaning into. But it doesn't seem like people are playing it that often right now, right? So you could get away with it, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, the Mawile is probably not something that I would bring to this tournament.
I wouldn't want to rely on it, I'll say. If that's my way to beat Guardi, I would not want to rely on it.
Well, yeah, and that was the thing, though, with Mawile in the, you know, kind of initial tournaments of the prior format when it was played, you had two decent matchups that it was useful in, right? Like, you had the Lugia matchup where you try to lock a Serena if they didn't know it was coming, and then obviously now you have Guardi that you try to lock a Greninja. But now you kind of lose the Lugia matchup with some of the Lugias going more toward, you know, like Jet Energy as an alternate energy, and then Gardevoir just is gonna suck if they, you know, obviously, if they know your strategy and they don't bench.
And here's my thing on Mawile is if your opponent plays the tech and they play it smart, you just lose that set on the spot. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, like, they could just, like, draw pass for as long as they want. If that is your actual win out and, like, you can't beat them if they are able to switch, which is usually the case, honestly, if you're playing Mawile, like, they could just draw pass until they're able to assemble, like, whatever they want, play the switch card, beat you. It's been, like, 30 minutes, and now you just lose, right? You lose the whole set off of relying on that card. And that feels really bad, you know, compared to techs like Greninja or Spiritomb, which are a little more passive in nature. This takes up a lot of, like, real estate in terms of time in your rounds. And if it doesn't work out for whatever reason, you just lose. So that's why I wouldn't really want to play a tech like that, personally.
It's risky business.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. There's the amount of time you're investing into something you don't even know will work, I don't like that.
So, and one final question that I'll have on the deck is, what about reversal energy? We've been seeing a lot of lists play one, and
yeah, I'm kind of like,
personally, I mean, like, you and Andrew kind of came to that conclusion for the group, like, to play zero. So talk to me a little bit about reversal and maybe the pros and cons and why you ultimately decided not to play it in your list.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a 0-1 situation. I would honestly, I would love for there to be like some kind of crazy reversal energy archetype that like maybe Gardevoir is a part of. But I think in practice, it is better just to play a more reliable, proactive deck than play the reversal energy. Sure, the reversal energy is an option, and if you play one, I won't fault you. But I would almost rather just like beat the bricks off my opponent than be relying on reversal energy, so to speak. And we've kind of seen that in Japan too, where like these top placing Gardevoir lists are not consistently playing reversal energy. And I think it's because they come to that same conclusion where the odds of you like finding reversal energy on the exact turn that you need it and making that swing, you might as well just play like a more reliable version of the deck. And that's where I think like the one reversal starts to feel a little harmless, but it's almost harmless in a way where it's like, you might as well just play like the one extra fog crystal at that point, you know? So it's fine. You can play one if you want. And if you have some crazy reversal energy box, that's fine too. My personal beef with the reversal energy, counter energy type boxes is they rely on losing, and it's just not like a super proactive strategy, and so it's not, doesn't feel like a way to win a tournament. So again, you can play the one as sort of a comeback out or whatever, but I think more heavy reversal energy strategies just aren't tournament winning strategies.
It'll be really exciting to see, because you know that that's certainly one where I feel like we could eat our words.
Oh, for sure. And to be honest, I would be happy to eat my words, because reversal energy is a card that opens up a lot of really cool options, right? It opens up a lot of creativity. My little pea brain just doesn't see it at the moment. So.
And that's okay. Maybe we'll see it by Worlds.
That's okay. My little pea brain can only go so far, right?
So true, man.
So let's pivot over to card of the day. And then we'll talk about the decks that don't need to be respected heading into NAIC.
Let's do it.
Awesome. So for this week's card of the day, I thought it was only fair to select the premier meme card of the format. And that's going to be Skeledirge EX, of course. Skirata has been getting a lot of hype, but of the three starters, I have a really big soft spot for Skeledirge. He's just a goofy little guy, you know. I like that he heals from all your Pokemon with his little song. I like that he has the burning voice. I like that you can see his torso behind the like text box on this card. I started with the Fuecoco line in Scarlet and Violet, so I really like the Skeledirge line as well. From start to finish, it's fun, it's cute. I like the theming they went for. This is kind of a bait and switch on the Meowscarada getting hype going into NAIC, but it's all fake hype. And to be honest, I think the fake hyping up of cards is one of our weakest like meme strategies in the Pokemon TCG.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I would love to keep that. I feel like I said this last year, honestly, but I would love to keep that in 2023. Like, if that trend just dies out this year.
Yeah, I think it's one of our weakest meme strategies. And I'll say, any amount of like funniness that could be extracted from it gets like bulldozed into the ground immediately, because people just completely overdo it within like 10 minutes of the meme existing. So if you're listening out there and you're like about to tweet about Meowscarada EX, maybe reconsider. Yeah. Yeah. I won't hate you if you do it, but like reconsider.
The fact that you decided to devote time on the podcast says everything.
I think so, right? I think so. So Skeledirge EX is the card of the day for this week. I'll also say the alt art of Skeledirge is so cool. I love the grocery store theme of the Fuecoco line. Who doesn't love a grocery store, right?
Oh my gosh, it's awesome.
As I've gotten older, I appreciate the art of the grocery store more and more. So, JW, why don't you introduce our sponsor for this week before we round out with the cards that don't need respect?
So the sponsor for this week's episode of the Tag Team Pokemon Podcast is, of course, Manscaped. We thank Manscaped so much for partnering with us to bring you the best in men's grooming products. They have everything from the ear and nose hair trimmer to the weed whacker to their acclaimed line of shampoos and hair conditioning products. It's absolutely amazing the sheer amount and quality of products that they have. So Riley, tell the folks back home where they can go if they want to not only support their own personal grooming, but support the podcast.
Yeah, if you don't head over to manscaped.com, you have such an awesome selection of products to choose from. Seriously, JM and I love their stuff. And you know, you already know that this weekend at NAIC, I'm going to be rocking the Manscaped Boxers 2.0. So if you want to level up your game, level up your hygiene, level up your situation, then head over to manscaped.com. Pick whatever you want from there. I personally advocate for the Boxers 2.0 and the Beard Hedger. GW is a huge fan of the Weed Whacker. Put whatever you want in that cart. At checkout, you're going to have an option to enter a code. If you enter code TAGTEAM, you'll get not only 20% off, but free shipping. That's a great deal for those of you listening out there. And every time you do that, it does support the cast. So we seriously appreciate those of you who are out there who are listening and use our code. So again, head over to manscaped.com, use code TAGTEAM at checkout, 20% off and free shipping. Show your support for the cast and get some great products to take care of yourself heading into your Pokemon tournaments.
Yeah, absolutely. We thank Manscaped so much for sponsoring the cast.
All right, JW. We've already been recording for a while. We easily go into like these deep tangents when we start talking about decks. What do we think are the decks or cards that we don't need to worry about going into NAIC? I'll start with one, and that's like Drifloon Champions Festival. Like that is not a thing. We agree on that?
I think so. Yeah, I think we can agree on that. Although it's one of those interesting things though, right? Because it's similar to Spiritomb, which we just don't have a lot of data on, considering that we haven't been able to play it in online tournaments. Not many players have Champions Festival in their Trading Card Game Live accounts. So even if it was a solid strategy, we really wouldn't know. I was messing around with Drifloon a lot in the kind of early stages of this format. I ultimately moved off of it because it felt slightly gimmicky, and it would feel bad against maybe like even a mirror match or something if they did happen to play like a Lost Vacuum and you were reaching for those, or like a Mew matchup for, I think that's probably maybe a little bit better of you know, a matchup to highlight what I'm trying to talk about. But if you're trying to reach for those higher numbers and they just bopped your tool, then you know, get knocked out, and then you have to send up something that probably is also going to get knocked out. Like, it just made for really bad times in a lot of different matchups. So I would agree, I'm not the biggest fan of the Drifloon Bravery Charm combo.
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, in theory it could help versus the mirror. I think in practice it is a gimmicky strategy that most notably isn't that good against Lost Box, which I would expect to see in similar quantities as the Guardi Mirror. So at that point, it just feels not worth it, right? So I don't think we need to worry about that kind of combo heading into NAIC. And you don't need to like be teching extra Lost Vacuums in your Guardi lists to account for it.
Although one, I actually don't think it's so bad. Like, if you're going to devote four slots to a Stadium Bump, right? If you're saying I'm going to play, you know, Artisan, Temple, and Collapse Stadium, and this is, again, another tangent, but if you say you're going to play those three stadiums and then you're going to play a Worker, I don't know. I feel like the Worker could be a vacuum, but I don't.
Worker has bailed me out on turn one, I'll say. Yeah, big time.
Man, that's insane, dude. That's insane. So here's another deck that you just do not need to worry about. In my opinion, it is Baxcalibur. I think this deck is horrible. Not hor- okay, not maybe not horrible.
It's horrible. You should feel bad for playing it. Yeah, if you're considering playing it, JW hates you.
You've disowned your family. You've brought shame to your name. But it's just one of those decks that it just doesn't have a good matchup spread. And it's certainly the best new archetype from the new set. But yeah, it's I feel like it's been a while since a set has kind of fallen this hard in terms of like the premier archetype from the set just not being good. But that is certainly the case with this deck. I would not touch that deck with a 49.5-foot pole.
50-foot pole, though, it's open.
Yeah, maybe a 50-foot pole. But then we're talking.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I don't respect Excalibur either. I also think, like, you know, the deck building decisions you're going to make around Excalibur just aren't even worth it anyway. Like, what, you're going to play that second Manaphy and Gardevoir? No, you're not. Come on, let's be real. Let's be serious for a second. You're not playing that second Manaphy. Forget about it, right? Like, it's just not worth it.
Right.
I think another deck that, honestly, like, you can take an L to and be comfortable with is Lugia. You know, we talked about Lugia in our top five, and I think it is a top five deck. But I think of those decks, besides Excalibur, I guess, the next one down that I'd be most comfortable taking a loss to would be Lugia. For two main reasons. First is obviously the inherent inconsistency to Lugia. You know, it's going to brick some amount of the time, and that's just the way of the Lug. And I think the second component is it just doesn't feel good enough against Gardevoir right now, so it doesn't feel like it has a comfortable spot in the metagame, right? So you look at these Lost Zone decks that do struggle against Lugia when Lugia is firing on all cylinders, and I think that's fine, right? Like, you can get away with that totally fine and not break a sweat.
Yeah, totally. I'm with you there. One deck that occupies an interesting place in my brain is Rapid Strike Urshifu. Now, I'm only going to say that you don't need to respect it because I don't think it'll show up in very high numbers, but I do think that the players that will opt to take the list will perform consistently just better compared to the field. I've been on the receiving end of a couple different single strike Urshifu lists, and while I've haven't had the best starts against them, they've pretty swiftly carried out their entire combo and just rolled me. So it's a really interesting archetype that just haven't put enough time into heading into this tournament, and it's not one that I will say you should disrespect because it's bad, but it is one that I think you can disrespect just because not a lot of players will play it. But I do think it is a deck to watch.
Yeah, I think I think I'm with you there. You know, Rapid Strike Urshifu is, I think, a little easier to justify because Mew is a little less popular than it was, and that was definitely its hardest matchup. I certainly have not put the time into that deck to even consider playing it, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. It's a deck that definitely you want to practice with. It's not what you want to pick up and go to the tournament blind
right.
with.
Right.
So here's an interesting query I have for you, JW. Mew, do you respect Spiritomb? Like, do you even worry about it or not?
As a Mew player?
Yeah.
I mean, if I didn't respect Mew, if I didn't respect Spiritomb, then I actually think Double Turbo Mew is...
And that's part of what I'm getting at. And then second is, like, how good is Mew at all going in?
Right. No, I mean, like, if you don't respect Spiritomb, if you're like, no one is going to play Spiritomb, then honestly, Double Turbo Mew is not a bad call. Like, you're looking at a very consistent deck, a proven winning deck, very solid matchups into Lost Box, solid matchup into Gardevoir if you can get the path to stick. Like, I think there's a lot of things going for Mew that, you know, that are good overall. You just get into the Spiritomb question a little bit even more so than the Drapion, because Drapion can sometimes work to your advantage. If you get up enough prizes, then the Drapion can actually help you achieve your win condition if you're able to you know, go up a couple prizes, they knock you out with the Drapion, you know, maybe you take that knockout and they can't bring it back, then you Echo Hornet back out and, you know, take your final prizes or whatever. So that is like a very real win condition for the Mew decks. But I would say, yeah, Spirit Tomb is just like a little bit harder to deal with. Obviously, there's
really, and you think it'll be
it as a double turbo Mew, so
you think that Spirit Tomb will be popular enough that you should respect it?
I do think so. Yeah, I do think Spirit Tomb is one of those cards that it's pretty easy to slip into, again, like a Gardevoir list. So the percentage of Gardevoir that I would expect to be playing it, probably like, I don't know, 40%. But again, that could be a little higher just because we don't have the data from the Limitless tournaments. I mean, I'm very serious about it. It's like, you know, and again, that's another one, like, could eat my words. Maybe it's like 10% of Guardy players play a Spirit Tomb. But I will say, you have a very bad matchup into Fusion Mew without Spirit Tomb. So it seems to me to be a no-brainer because you can so easily search it out with the Gardevoir deck because they were playing it in Japan in their Gardevoir decks, and because it gives you a slightly favorable matchup with one card where you otherwise had, you know, a pretty unfavorable matchup.
Yeah.
So
I think that's fair.
I think it's very worth the space, and it also has kind of that fringe benefit of being a decent tech against anything that would play a Lumineon.
Yeah, and I think the fringe benefit is good. Like, it's also kind of disruptive against, like, Lugia randomly. Like, you can kind of stick them in these awkward situations where they really want a Lumineon and can't if you have a Spirit Doom down. So I guess I have two more questions for you. First is, are there any other, you know, obvious hot takes, I suppose, you know, because there's certainly plenty of cards you wouldn't respect. Are there any other, like, hot take cards or decks that you would not respect at NAIC?
Any other decks I would not respect? Man. I mean, Meowscarada?
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of what I was trying to avoid. So, okay, no Meowscarada. Final question then. NAIC is just around the corner. If people are listening to this, they might well be on their travel to NAIC.
Yeah, absolutely.
What is your current top contender going into that tournament?
Going into NAIC, I mean, it's Gardevoir, I think. You were saying that you think maybe Lost Zone Box will take the most percentage of the field, but I think it just has to be Gardevoir. It has too many tricks. It has too many, you know, across-the-board solid matchups. I think Gardevoir is the deck to beat for this tournament, and I think it'll see about, you know, 25 to 30% of the day one field.
And that's what you would most seriously consider personally?
Personally, I would be considering Lost Box.
Interesting. So what is that dynamic there? Is it just the matchup into Gardevoir?
Yeah, it's just the matchup into Gardevoir. Lost Box was the deck that I played most recently. So if I get another opportunity to sling it, like, again, went 6-3 at Milwaukee, not the placement that I wanted, but, you know, it certainly had promise.
It's not a placement you didn't want, though, let's be clear.
Right. That's true. I did get my final points for the invite, so overall, you know, a solid trip. But I think that that Lost Zone Box, just with the favorable Guardy matchup, with generally strong matchups outside of a few specific decks, I think it's a really good contender for those that have put the time in to learn it.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Like, Lost Box is kind of my number one right now, but it wouldn't take a lot for me to pivot to Guardy. I really like playing Guardy.
Dude, I love playing Guardy, man. Yeah, I thought that was going to be the only deck that I play for NAIC. And then we kind of got into the weeds a little bit the other day with the, you know, specifically the Lost Box matchup. Because, again, if we think that the field is going to, like, 50%, 60% of the field is going to be a Lost Box deck or a Guardy deck, then it behooves us to test that matchup into the ground.
Yeah.
And so the other day we were getting into it, and it's just like, man, it just felt really bad for Guardy. Now, granted, the Lost Box player that I was playing against was drawing the stones, but
the thing is, they like do that a lot, you know.
I know, man. It's frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think, you know, in conclusion, JW and I really want to play Guardy, but Lost Box is kinda at the forefront for us right now. If you're listening to this and on your way to NAIC, I think a lot of the field will be thinking similar things. So, you know, use that to inform your own decision, right? Like, Lostbox and Guardy are the big two in this format. Everything else is significantly further down in that hierarchy, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. But if you have one of those decks, like an Arceus deck, I don't fault you for it. If you're playing some Giratina, like, that's a solid deck. If you're playing Mew, like, again, that's a solid deck. These are all decks that I think could win the tournament. But if we're talking about, like, the cream of the crop, the creme de la creme, the highest of highs, you know, the zenith of the format right now, I think it's just revolving around this Gardevoir Lostbox dynamic.
Agreed. Cool. I think that's a good summation of where we are in this format. JW, do you have any final words of wisdom before we sign off for today?
Well, it's going to be a fun tournament. I mean, it's the largest tournament of all time. So take that with a grain of salt when you're making your deck choices or your final tech choices. It's like, at the end of the day, is it really going to matter? I mean, yes, but ultimately no, because there's only going to be one winner. And if it's not me,
then it doesn't matter who it is.
Really salty. Exactly.
Yeah. I'm going to be very upset if I'm not first place at the end of this tournament. I agree. Awesome. Well, we appreciate every single one of you who are out there listening and supporting the cast. If you want to follow along with how we're doing in the tournament or just generally follow the podcast, JW and I are both on Twitter. You can find myself at Smiles with Riles, JW at Real John Walter, and the podcast at Tag Team Pokemon. And if you want to listen to the podcast live, we record it every single week at twitch.tv/Munner. JW also will record occasionally on his channel, as well as running a great stream of his own at twitch.tv/FlexDaddyRighteous. We appreciate every single one of you. Be sure to say hi at NAIC. We're happy to meet you. We have such great fans. I always tell the people who are willing to listen that the Tag Team Podcast fans are so awesome, so cool. I love meeting you. So be sure to say hi at NAIC, and we wish you the best of luck in the tournament.
Have a great tournament, everyone. This is going to be so fun. Can't wait for you to come to my hometown city of
Stomping Grounds. Yeah, we love it. Awesome. Well, we will catch you all in Columbus, and if we don't, we'll catch you next time. Peace.
See ya.